captured what, to my knowledge, is the largest bear to ever be captured, weighed, and then released alive back into the wild.
Record-setting Chukchi Sea polar bears paint a more complicated picture of climate change. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, September 10th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska Airlines shows off a new plane for Fairbanks flights.
You always wished you had your dad's hot rod keys to the car. This is that airplane. It is an absolute blast to fly.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
A rash of small plane crashes late this summer in Alaska has pushed the number of crash-related fatalities past last year's total, according to National Transportation Safety Board Alaska Region Chief Clint Johnson. In comparing today's date with September 10th of last year, Johnson says the actual number of light plane crashes is down.
In 2012, we had a total of 98 accidents. In 2013, on September 10th, we have a total of 85. However, that's where the similarities change. Last year, in 2012, we had 10 fatalities, and unfortunately, this year we have 32 fatalities, which is pretty surprising.
He says an investigation into the most recent crash on Monday continues. The crash of an experimental home-built airplane took the life of Big Lake pilot Kenneth M. Whidbey and seriously injured passenger Scott Jason Scott. Johnson says late summer and fall tends to have more fatal plane crashes.
Obviously, during the latter part of August and September, historically for our office, has always been a busy season. However, this year it seems to be a little bit more busier than in years past, no doubt about it.
He says it's too early to tell if there are determining factors related to all the crashes.
Keep in mind that all of these investigations, these most recent accidents here, are still very much in progress, whereas they're still in the very preliminary stages. So it's way too early to look and see if there are any similarities between any of the accidents.
NTSB keeps records on the number of crashes and fatalities on a calendar that runs October 1st through September 30th. Johnson says a crash in Soldotna in July took 10 lives. Another at Merrill Field in Anchorage recently took two more. While a plane crash on September 5th killed one man, other light plane accidents ended without fatalities. Two men walked 8 miles to safety after their plane went down near Nondalton earlier this month, and three men were rescued after their helicopter iced up and was weathered in on Mount McGeek at Katmai National Park. A pilot and passenger survived a crash into a lake near Talkeetna over the weekend. The Chukchi Sea has one of the highest rates of sea ice loss in the Arctic, but the polar bears who live there don't appear to be suffering as a result. A new study from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service shows the Chukchi Sea bears are just as healthy as they were 20 years ago. The bears still face a grim, long-term future, but the new research shows there will be a lot of nuance along the way in how climate change plays out for polar bears in the Arctic. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologist Eric Regier has studied more than 250 polar bears on the Chukchi Sea ice since 2008, but some are more memorable than others, like the massive male he captured this spring.
There's always a sense of mystery when you start, when we weigh the bear. We have a tripod and a chain hoist, and we start hoisting the bear up off the ground, and everybody's watching the scale, especially if it's a big bear, and watching it go up and up and up. And so, you know, this guy, you know, the legs of the tripod are flexing. Everybody's kind of watching with bated breath.
The final number?
1,390 pounds, which is a whole lot of bear by any standard.
A new record, in fact, for a polar bear captured and released in Alaska. The previous record was set in 2010, with another bear Regeer caught during his study. Regeer didn't know what to expect in 2008 when he began looking at the health of Chukchi polar bears. But since then, Regeer has measured, weighed, and taken samples from a lot of fat bears. His study shows bears in the region are doing as well or even better than they were 20 years ago.
So despite some significant sea ice loss in the Chukchi Sea region, bears had maintained their size, they maintained their body condition, which means their fatness, and their level of reproduction.
It's a different story for polar bears off Alaska's north coast in the southern Beaufort Sea. According to research from the U.S. Geological Survey, sea ice retreat is clearly making it harder for those bears to find food. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Study shows male bears in the Chukchi Sea weigh on average more than 100 pounds more than their counterparts in the southern Beaufort Sea.
Indeed, at present time, it is something of a tale of two populations. Polar bears in western Alaska appear to be doing well. Despite the large sea ice declines, polar bears north of Alaska don't appear to be doing as well.
In the southern Beaufort Sea, there's a longer history of sea ice loss, keeping bears away from their preferred hunting habitats over the biologically productive waters of the continental shelf. And the Chukchi Sea is full of warm, nutrient-rich water that produces a lot of food. Regeer says bears in the Chukchi may have reduced access to seals, but if so, it's not affecting their size.
Say you eat 7 big turkey dinners a week. You're probably pretty big, pretty robust, pretty healthy. You're getting enough calories. And then something changes, your budget's reduced, and you only eat 6 big turkey dinners a week. Well, you know, for most of us, that's plenty for, you know, to maintain the body condition, the size that we need. And it's not the best analogy, but it's kind of similar to what's probably going on in the Chukchi Sea. These animals live in a very productive ecosystem. And so, yes, in the past 25 years, the sea ice has reduced. They have less time on the sea ice. But what we think is they probably still have enough time on the sea ice to catch as many seals as they need to survive. They're still doing well.
There's some evidence the Chukchi Sea is even becoming more productive as the sea ice retreats, allowing more sunlight in the water to produce a bigger algae bloom that pays dividends up the food chain. That may account for the record-setting bears Regeer has encountered. But he says if the ice continues melting at the current rate, polar bears and the Chukchi will face a very different future.
At some point, the sea ice will have declined far enough that polar bears aren't able to do what they do. They don't have enough time to spend on the sea ice to catch enough seals to remain fat and healthy and have a lot of cubs.
Regeer doesn't know if that will happen in 5 years or 50 or longer, but he says he hopes the new study helps tell a more complicated and more interesting story about the bears in the meantime.
We've done a very good job of getting the message out about polar bears. And the simple message that's gotten now is, as goes the sea ice, so go the polar bears.
The more complex truth about the species leaves a lot of room for future research on the subject. And that means Regeer and his colleagues will be out on the Chukchi Sea ice studying polar bears for many years to come. Their research appears in the latest issue of Global Change Biology. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Former State Senator Bill Ray has died. He was 91. Ray represented Juneau in the Alaska legislature for more than 20 years during a time when a number of landmark projects were built in the capital city, including the state office building and Egan Drive. Ray helped secure a downtown facility for the University of Alaska Southeast, and the university named it in his honor. A Democrat, Ray was elected to the House of Representatives in 1964. He was elected to the Senate in 1970 and served for 16 years. Jim Duncan was in the House then, and when Ray retired, he ran for his seat, Senate seat, and won. Duncan says he learned a lot from the guy who spent several years as the chairman of the powerful Senate Finance Committee.
He had a great knowledge and understanding of the budget. Spent a lot of time at it, knew it in pretty much detail, and that was what was important for Juneau at that time because, you know, clearly Juneau survived on operating budgets, still does to some extent, and getting a good, sound operating budget and keeping positions in Juneau was very critical, and Bill played a very critical role in doing that.
Ray had a good sense of humor, and those who knew him well saw a real soft spot under an often gruff exterior. That tough side helped him negotiate funding for major projects at home and statewide, as well as a fight to keep the capital in Juneau. Ray was a teenager when he moved to Alaska in 1938 with his parents. He worked as a longshoreman, then enlisted in the U.S. Navy, and later returned to Juneau. He commercial fished, worked at his family's bar, and then opened several liquor stores. Governor William Egan appointed him to the Alcohol Beverage Control Board in 1959. 2 years later, he was reappointed and elected chairman. His first campaign for the Alaska House ended in defeat, but the 22 years he served after that are chronicled in a book he wrote and published himself in 2003, entitled Liquor, Legislation, and Laughter. Ray died at his home in Squim, Washington, where he and his wife Nancy moved a number of years ago. No services are planned. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Togiak refuge biologists find a surprise inside a trout.
Its belly was pretty full, so they wanted to see what it had been eating. No one ever thought they'd pull 19 shrews out of it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Contracting issues have delayed the start of a planned cleanup work around abandoned well sites in Alaska, a spokesman for the U.S. Bureau of Land Management said today. In May, BLM Alaska released a draft plan identifying 50 abandoned wells in the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska that it believes require cleanup by the agency. The plan prioritized the remediation of the first 16 of those sites in the reserve. One of them, described as lying near a well-traveled winter road with a building well known for providing shelter to travelers in poor weather, has a gas leak that the agency said could pose a threat to public health and safety. The plan called for surface work at several sites southeast of Barrow to begin as early as this year, with cleanup of drums submerged in oil seeps and other debris. But Aaron Curtis, a spokeswoman for BLM Alaska, said that kind of work needs to be done in the summer. She said the contracting process can be lengthy and it will probably be next summer before that work begins. She said there is no greater risk associated with the delay. The debris has been out there for a long time and will get frozen over during the winter. Alaska Airlines is showing off an aircraft it plans to start using in the state next year. The Bombardier Q400 is scheduled for use on Fairbanks Anchorage and Kodiak Anchorage routes, where the 76-seat twin-prop plane will replace or augment current service with larger 737 jets. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Alaska Air Group displayed a Q400 in a Fairbanks hangar, where Vice President Glenn Johnson described it as a good fit for Alaska commuter flights.
The Q400 has about 30% lower cost per departure, so that shouldn't help us as we move down the road to bring lower fares to the state.
The addition of Q400s will also allow for an expanded flight schedule, a change Johnson said will provide more travel options between Fairbanks and Anchorage.
We will go from 7 departures a day to 9, one of which will still be a 737, and so we have reduced the number of gaps. We're not quite to an hourly shuttle pattern all throughout the day, but certainly getting rid of the gaps.
Johnson likens the Q400's short-run performance to the 737 jet, saying it's able to make the trip between Fairbanks and Anchorage in about the same time. Alaska Air Group partner Horizon already operates Q400s in the lower 48. Horizon Air Director of Flight Standards and Training Perry Salmonson described the plane as part sports car, part SUV.
You always wished you had your dad's hot rod keys to the car. This is that airplane. It's got 5,000 horsepower aside, 10,000 horsepower total, and it is an absolute blast to fly. This is made by Bombardier in Canada. It's born and bred for flying in rough, tough conditions, and this is what it's made for.
Salmonson laid out a number of high-tech features of the next generation Q400s that will be used in Alaska, including new satellite weather tracking that helps pilots see and work around bad conditions, and a noise-canceling system that makes the cabin quieter for passengers.
There's about 70-plus microphones throughout the cabin that are picking up the noise at that spot. And the computer figures out how to make the exact opposite of what the microphone is picking up, and those things cancel out.
The Q400 is a little shorter and narrower than a 737 jet. It features slimmer seats but the same legroom and over 6 feet of headroom. There's been public concern about having to walk outside to get on and off the commuter plane, but Alaska Air's Glenn Johnson says the Q400 will be set up for loading and deplaning passengers in bad weather.
Sometimes it's a covered walkway if it's more wet, inclement weather, and sometimes we use jetways that can be accommodated with this airplane. And so we're looking at what the right solution is, particularly in Fairbanks.
Alaska Airlines will begin Q400 service on the Fairbanks Anchorage and Kodiak Anchorage routes in March. The addition of the new planes and service will create 60 new pilot and flight attendant jobs in Anchorage. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
A rainbow trout from the Togiak Refuge may have broken a record. As APRN's Dave Waldron reports, the record may be disturbing, but it is truly impressive.
Mark Lisick is a fish biologist at the Togiak Refuge, and just a few weeks ago, he and a group of his colleagues were catching rainbow trout for a tracking project. But one unusually large fish they caught was bleeding and wasn't going to survive, so...
So the guys that caught it decided to dissect it. Its belly was, felt pretty full, so they wanted to see what it had been eating. No one ever thought they'd pull 19 shrews out of it.
Correct. 19 almost fully preserved shrews. Lisick was shocked.
I can't say for certain that I've ever seen a well-preserved shrew in a stomach analysis.
Let alone 19 of them. Granted, Lisick says they don't usually dissect fish at the refuge, although he's seen plenty of trout cut open in his 29 years as a biologist. He says it's not uncommon for trout to eat rodents, but a number this large is stunning. Lisick has a theory on how it happened.
So it's possible that this fish just happened to be in a good channel, and maybe there was a flood event or something, and all the shrews that got washed into the river weren't actually swimming. They were probably drowned, and this fish just happened to be in the right spot at the right time.
Lisick says that's because shrews aren't strong swimmers, unlike voles who can swim across an entire lake. He says some fishermen are aware of this and use it to their advantage.
It's pretty common for fly fishermen to use a vole pattern or a shrew pattern. It's just a big wad of deer hair tied on a hook, and then it's trimmed to look like a mouse or a vole. And you can, if the fish are there, they usually find it pretty irresistible.
Togiak Refuge posted a picture of the trout and its rodent feast on Facebook. It immediately went viral.
We're over 70,000 hits on that photo alone.
And right before I spoke to Lisick, he had just gotten off of a phone interview with the BBC.
So this fish is kind of a celebrity. Has anyone named it yet?
No, but you're welcome to.
It sounds like the celebrity trout's 19 shrew meal might be a record. Lisick says the most he's ever heard of is 7, and that was inside a grayling.
It may be surprising how many fish actually do specialize in that, or it could have been just a freak event.
And now that this rodent obsession some fish share is more common knowledge, Lisick wonders how many people will still want to catch them. He says a friend of his might have a solution.
He said he's not going to tell his wife about it. He's afraid if he tells her that she won't eat grayling anymore.
And just in case you're wondering, Lisick says the chances you find a shrew inside of a salmon is next to impossible. Thank goodness. In Anchorage, I'm Dave Waldron.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by
The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein. Attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Hoonah's Village Native Corporation may build its own cruise ship dock. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Hoonah Totem executives say the corporation won't use a berthing facility planned by the city because cruise lines don't like the location. It prefers a different spot closer to its Icy Strait Point attraction, which brings the ships to town. CEO Larry Gaffney posted a letter to shareholders recently saying the corporation will pursue funding and construction of its own pier without city involvement. Gaffney also wrote that the city's preferred site, called Shaman Point, should be protected for its cultural values. He could not be immediately reached for further comment. The legislature several years ago awarded the city a grant, now $15 million, to build a multipurpose dock. Lawmakers said cruise ships would be the main customers. The State Division of Community and Regional Affairs recently suspended that grant, meaning none of it can be spent. Director Scott Ruby says the state will take it away entirely if the city proceeds with its plans.
Regardless of what the state thinks about whether it's a good location or a bad location, if the cruise ship industry is saying we will not use it, then there's a problem there.
Ruby sat down with Hoonah officials recently. He says there was a good discussion, but no resolution. Hoonah Interim City Administrator Bob Prunella says his delegation gave the state new research backing its dock site.
The city feels that it's, they did lots of study and geotech study and wind and wave on all three sites, and this one comes out looking like, by far, a preferred site for an operation like this.
He says a site preferred by Hoonah Totem and the cruise lines would face rough winter weather. That could prevent uses by other vessels, such as commercial fishing boats or barges. Prunella remains optimistic, even though there have been no recent meetings with the corporation or the cruise lines.
We will move forward and see how this pans out. Give it another try. Make some more effort. I'd like to see effort on both sides to come to something that everyone can live with.
Community and Regional Affairs Director Ruby also hopes the parties can come to an agreement, but that has to be soon. His boss, Commerce Commissioner Susan Bell, recently gave the city of Hoonah notice that it would lose the dock grant if no compromise was reached, and the deadline is in a week or so. Hoonah is 40 air miles west of Juneau. It has around 800 residents, including many Hoonah Totem shareholders. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Talkeetna's honorary mayor is recovering in his hometown after a dog attack on Labor Day weekend sent him to the hospital. The attack left Mayor Stubbs, a 16-year-old yellow tabby, with a punctured lung, broken sternum, and a 4-inch gash in his side, as well as other injuries. KTNA's Philip Manning has been following the story from Talkeetna. Hi, Philip.
Hi, Lori.
Philip, let us know, what is Stubbs' current status?
Well, as of today, Stubbs is recovering at a private residence. He's under strict doctor's orders to have the feline equivalent of bed rest for the next couple of months. Normally, he hangs out at Nagley's store, and Lori Steck, who's the manager at Nagley's, says that she's taken his pain patch off today and plans to keep him out of public for probably a couple of weeks while his pain diminishes. After that, I believe the plan is to move him back to his normal sleeping spot, which is an antique dog sled with a pile of furs on top of it. I think she's going to move his crate up there, that is.
Mayor Stubbs' story has gone international. How did that coverage go global?
Well, it really started last summer. The Stubbs craze kind of took a lot of people here by surprise. To most residents here in Talkeetna, he's just the orange cat that lives at Nagley's. And last year, I think it was KTUU did a feature piece on him that got picked up nationally, and from there it basically went viral. It's been all over newspapers, websites, national TV, news networks. And so, and this year, when he got hurt again, a lot of those same outlets picked the story right back up, almost as if it had never gone away. So, and it, just today, in fact, when I was talking to Lori Steck today, she said that she just got off the phone with the Wall Street Journal and that they're planning on sending someone to Talkeetna. I don't know if they are going to try to interview the mayor, but they are definitely sending someone out.
And Philip, help us remember what the story was last summer. It had to do with Stubbs becoming mayor. Is that correct?
Right. And the urban legend has that 15 years ago when Stubbs was a kitten, well, almost 16 years ago now when he was a kitten, there was a write-in campaign and that the town was fed up with the human candidates for mayor. And so everyone decided to write in a cat. And that's not quite the whole truth. In fact, Talkeetna has no mayor.
Previous stories about Stubbs' injuries have mentioned the costs of his care at being more than $2,000. How is that being paid for?
Well, it's actually gone even higher than that now, Lori. At the largest single donation, they've had donations coming in from all around the world, and the largest single donation they've received was from Nine Lives Cat Food, who apparently gave $3,000 for his immediate care and the cost of his surgery and things like that. Like I said, they've been getting donations from all around the world to the point that they're dedicating a lot of time to documenting, you know, how much money is coming in so that they have a final figure. There's no hard figure right now, just because the money is still coming in and a lot of that's being handled by the bookkeepers there at Nagley's. And so whatever's left over, there will be some continuing care cost just because these injuries were so severe. He's going to be potentially on pain meds, and there'll be follow-ups and things like that for a while to come. What's left after that, they're still kind of formulating the plan, but I know one of the big things that Lori has said that they want to do is use some of that money to support the local veterinarian. Talkeetna has a vet who lives here, but there's not a full-fledged clinic with facilities for surgery and things like that. And this vet, she was able to stabilize Stubbs enough that they were able to get him to the vet's office in Big Lake. And that's largely credited with how he managed to make it through this.
Well, Philip, thanks for the update on Talkeetna's honorary mayor, Stubbs the Cat.
You're very welcome.
Philip Manning is a reporter at KTNA in Talkeetna. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Rosemary Alexander and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Philip Manning in Talkeetna. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The Salmon Project. In Alaska, salmon are food, annual traditions, and a source of jobs, businesses, and community. Information on caring for salmon habitat or your weekend catch, plus salmon love stories at salmonlove.com. And by Crowley, committed to Alaska for nearly 60 years. From basketball games to sled dog races, Crowley supports events that bring Alaskans together. Crowley supports what matters, and public radio matters. CPDAlaska.com. The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking ideas to improve the rural determination process. Only Alaska residents living in rural areas or communities are eligible to harvest fish and wildlife resources on federal public lands under federal subsistence regulations. The deadline to submit your ideas is November the 1st. For more information, call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.